The Rappahannock Line by Martin Hicks, narrated by John Delano Ziegler, Jr. Prologue. Winter was stretching its cold hand over the landscape of Middle Virginia as the men of the Ogeechee Volunteer Rifles established their camps in the lee of the range of low ridges and hills, whose eastern slopes stretched gently down towards the Rappahannock River. The trees, which had so recently clothed those slopes with lush green, now stretched their bare branches towards surly gray skies, and the fields lay stripped or, at best, covered in yellow-brown grass, already scarred earlier in the month by that first blanket of snow. But, as was seemingly typical of Central Virginia winters, that initial blast of cold weather had passed. It had been replaced at first by storms of wind and rain, which, together with the snowmelt, had turned the ground to expanses of mud, only for this, too, to be supplanted in its turn by dry cold, carried on the harsh northwesterly winds that blew down the river valley. It was time, the newly arrived troops told each other, for an end to this damned foolishness of winter season campaigning. A halt should be called in the fighting, in order for men to devote their remaining energies to surviving the impending winter. But, regardless of this near universal desire among the soldiers, there was little sign of this happening, or that the generals and their political masters were in any way sympathetic to the idea. This nearest stretch of the Rappahannock flowed almost due south, having turned just upstream from a meandering west-to-east course to begin the final leg of its journey to the salt waters of Chesapeake Bay. Here was the limit of the river's navigable reaches, which was, by all accounts, what had put the town of Fredericksburg there, just south of the bend and downstream from a stretch of islands, shoals, and rapids in the first place. Fredericksburg was as far upriver as one could sail, even in a shallow-drafted ship, before the depth of water, the rocks and shoals, and the width of the river became insufficient for anything other than lighter craft and muscle power. The town had seen its beginnings here over 100 years ago, so the men on the ridges now knew, and the place certainly had a look of genteel Virginian antiquity about it. Buildings of stone, brick, and wood formed a succession of orderly rectangular blocks, flanking streets which stretched along the western bank of the river, with the tallest spires of the two main churches and the courthouse, together with the more solid but somewhat shorter tower on the Presbyterian church, rising as landmarks above the other rooftops. But for all of its apparent character and its tranquility, it was clear to any who now looked upon it that Fredericksburg had gotten itself caught in a trap. Or maybe that was an over-severe statement of the situation, since Fredericksburg itself had done little to bring about its present predicament. Its misfortune was simply to be situated here, in this part of Middle Virginia, on this stretch of the river. The trap was to do with the war, coming in a few months to the end of its second full year. The war had set and was now in the process of closing the trap, for it was the war that had brought the armies into existence. Those armies had spent the previous year ranging across the landscape of Virginia, even spilling their destruction briefly northward into Maryland, as they strained, by maneuver and countermaneuver, to gain an advantage over each other. Now, in the final days of autumn, their advance units, with their endless processions of men, wagon, and guns, had come in numbers to these lower reaches of the Rappahannock River, and therefore to Fredericksburg. Here, on the ridges and hills to the west of the town, as November ended its third week, 6 brigades of Confederate infantry had assembled, under the command of Major Generals Robert Ransom and Lafayette McLaws. They had arrived in the last of Wednesday's daylight, after a miserable 3-day march.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?